Interview with Sherman Wald, first bassoonist of the Boston Symphony on Thursday, April 20th, 1978. Well, why don't you tell me under what circumstances you studied with them?
Well, I went to Curtis as a bassoon player, of course. And that was right before and right after the war in the 40s. And Tabateau not only taught chamber music, but he also conducted the orchestra.
Mm.
So my contact with him was both as a coach, a coach teacher and conductor of the Curtis Orchestra.
Mm.
So I saw him in all aspects.
Mm. What kind of atmosphere did he generate?
Well, he... I still remember the chamber, you've probably heard this before, chamber music classes were, I think, on Wednesday afternoon, and Wednesday morning people got sick and nervous and worried about their reeds, and it was very electrifying. I always felt, after I joined an orchestra, that it's too bad. Well, of course, it was obviously too bad that he left, because he lived many years after he left Curtis, and I feel so many good players could have come from him and didn't have the opportunity. But it was just fantastic, the whole business of being with him. And he'd walk in the room, and it was like my days when I played under Bruno Walter. When he came in the room, it was very special.
Can you remember, well, some of the best classes or some of the worst?
Well, I remember, for example, one incident. He taught with a blackboard and a chalk very often in the ensemble. And he would come in and he never was very happy. And that was something very special. And he would come in and he would look at the horn player, who I think now manages an orchestra in Canada, and say, I would like to have a high A, start pianissimo, crescendo and diminuendo, you know, and the kid would be, the horn would be shaking, and he would try, and of course he couldn't do it. So Tabateau would just explain that his tongue was like a hot knife, and the mouthpiece was like butter, and there shouldn't be an abrupt clash between the two. That knife, hot knife, goes into the butter thusly, and would you try it again? I was going to say please, but he would never say please, and the kid would do it, and it would be there. I mean, things like that. He was a great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And funny, I'm not an oboist, but I don't think I teach. I teach 8 hours a week at Boston University. I don't think I ever teach a class without mentioning his name. And I wasn't, he influenced me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I wasn't an oboe,
yes.
You know, a private pupil of
yes.
his. It was that wonderful.
Was there any time when he made you feel particularly good about your playing?
Yes. The biggest day at Curtis for me was one of the first times that he heard me. And, I don't know. It wasn't the first time, but we had played. And he wanted to hear something from me. And I played. And he said, you know, he says, he's really very good. He always said pretty good. He says, but you look so stupid when you play. And that was such a compliment. I mean, you would today, you would take him to the union. I was on a high for weeks, and everybody was patting me on the back and how great it was, you know, that he actually complimented me. But he didn't really compliment. I mean, he complimented me with a knife, you know. And I should say this, and I'm sure you've heard all this, but like in the Boston Symphony, which is a long way from Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Orchestra, the influence on the Boston Symphony would be myself, first clarinet, first oboe, concertmaster, first cello, first viola. I mean, the nucleus of the Boston Symphony is made up of, I could say Curtis, but we're all influenced by Tabateau.
A lot of people were disturbed by Tabateau's dogmatic approach. Did it bother you at all?
Certainly it bothered me, but what he said once was true. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I got a very big job right away and I really wasn't prepared for it. And I had some problems. This goes back to over 20 years. But no matter what happened after Tabitha's class, it was pleasant compared to his classes. Now, that's a very positive way of looking at it rather than negatively. But he actually said that. He said, you know, he says, you might think I'm tough, but it'll be easier for you when you get up. And my first position took me with, I don't want to talk about myself, but it took me playing under Bruno Walter, George Zell, Arthur Radzinski. I was just fortunate and young enough to have been able to play with these great men, and everything was so it was nothing compared to a Tabitha class. So I would say that it was dogmatic, but it was after all, I wasn't there to be treated nicely. I was there to learn something, and I think today. I think I'm probably too nice to my pupils. I think if I was more like Tabitha, but I can't be because I don't have that personality, I could help them more. I wish they were more worried about their lessons instead of coming to a lesson saying, oh, you know, Mr. Well, I'm really not prepared. I had so much this week. You could never do that. And they shouldn't do that. I mean, I can't do that now to Seiji Ozawa. Why should a student do it?
Yes.
And so I really have to take your question and say, no, at the time I did, but it was really, I was mistaken.
What music did you work on in the chamber music classes? Do you remember?
Oh, nothing. Let's see, we had Seymour Lipkin in class, so we would do, I really can't...
Do you spend a lot of time on each piece?
We would spend a lot of, all year maybe, on a piece.
Mm-hmm.
We did mostly things that did involve piano, so I would just guess that must have been Beethoven, Mozart. I remember Lefebvre. Nothing...
Yeah,
that wasn't important, you see.
Yes, it was not what you worked on, but what he said. What sort of things did he talk about to achieve good ensemble?
Well, of course, you had to listen to everyone because he would call you stupid if you came in early or late. He used this famous number system, you know. And I say you know because I'm obviously not the first person you talked about. And I think he would... talk to us the way he talked to his oboe students. He would take a 13-note cadenza and divide it into numbers, so it would really sound natural. And this number system, as he put it, it was very mechanical, and he knew teaching it was mechanical. But he said, when he conducted the orchestra, for example, he would tell you how it should be done in the numbers. He felt guilty about it because he'd say, you know, I'm not going to try to imitate him because there's so many people who do it well, but he would say, even when he would know what he was going to do, and even when he was didn't feel like playing or felt ill, it still sounded great. And if you don't have an idea what you're going to do and you don't feel good, it can sound bad. But it may not sound great, but it would sound very good. It would still sound like Tabitha because he knew exactly what he was going to do. And this is something that I think all of us who are impressed with that still use and to teach and for ourselves. We systematically find out what we're going to do, and then when we're ready to play it, we don't really think about it anymore, but to prepare ourselves for it.
Yes.
And that's what he projected.
Yes. As far as the numbers go, what all do they imply to you?
Phrasing. I mean, that's what it's about. And rhythm. Numbers imply to me... Well, when we speak, for example, I'll give you a little lesson. You start a sentence and you continue like I'm speaking now, and you arrive at a climax, which I'm doing now, and then you finish as I've just done. And that's what the number system is about. Rather than you wouldn't speak like this.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
I think that covers it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely phrasing so it would sound natural. Mm-hmm. Find out where your high point is, mm-hmm. and you work toward that. 1, 4, 3, 2, 1, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mm-hmm. And I found, I think after most of us left school, we kind of devised our own number system, because mm-hmm. that really wasn't so important exactly, but it was the idea of the whole number system that helped us.
What I was wondering was, it's not just dynamic.
No.
And it's...
It was dynamic, rhythm, and color, mm-hmm. really. Uh-huh. Have you ever heard the Tabby Toe tapes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
well, yes. Then you really...
Well, I'm trying to find out what people thought he was talking about.
Uh-huh.
How they interpreted what he said, so that I have gotten from different people.
That's interesting, yeah. Well, I have to admit that they, all three things, it was phrasing and rhythm and even color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could devise your own number system for that.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever talk about vibrato?
Yes, but to him, vibrato was singing. I felt that, and you know, I get confused now because I'm at an age now where I can't remember whether it was Tabby Toe or whether it was Schoenbach or whether it was Del Negro,
yeah.
or who was
yes.
most influenced.
Yes.
The vibrato I use is a singing vibrato from the diaphragm. I can't remember. There are things, some things that I just, everything gets mixed. I took lessons after I left school with some, I really did some funny things, like Bruno Walter took a very big interest in me as a young man, and I was in trouble when I was playing in the Chicago Symphony, and he helped me so terrifically.
Mm-hmm.
And I really could say that because of Bruno Walter and even George Zell, that they coached me enough to be able to arrive at
mm-hmm.
at the principal position in Boston, where I have been for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't now remember mm-hmm. Who did what for me, except they all did.
Yes.
Metropolis too.
Yes.
Dimitri Metropolis was a big influence on me.
The only reason why I ask about vibrato is that, particularly as oboe, said that in oboe lessons he would never even discuss it, but yet in chamber music classes I think that he would at least mention mm-hmm. in terms of ensemble.
I think that probably, and that's my remembrance also, that it was more, he would say chante, he would want you to sing, and that would mean vibrate,
mm-hmm.
but he wouldn't really mm-hmm. tell you mm-hmm. to move your diaphragm.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm sure that was it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm confused.
Did he use the terms up and down impulses in the chamber music classes that you describe? A phrase like up, 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 down. That?
I can't remember.
Okay.
That has not... you have to remember that I have played under so many conductors now that I just...
Yes. I can understand it.
I probably haven't told you anything new here.
Oh, no.
Because, I can't, I can only tell you what I know.
Do you remember him being the bar line being very restrictive about where you could breathe in terms of
yes,
the bar line?
Yes, that was very important.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to breathe in a natural place, like when you were mm-hmm. singing or talking.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the reasons that Tabato today could not be as influential is that those of us who were doing work with Tabato were studying solfège.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew what he was talking about. Where today, now I don't know about many schools in New York, but I know some of the prominent schools, they don't require mm-hmm. a music performance major to study solfège.
Mm-hmm.
And he would laugh. I mean, it would be impossible mm-hmm. to teach someone who doesn't understand solfège. If they didn't sing solfège, they would be playing by rote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the second space fingers like this, rather mm-hmm. than law.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about breathing. Solfège is, you do mm-hmm. know where to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, it was important.
Mm-hmm. No one else had really mentioned how important solfège was.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad I mentioned it. I believe that some of the students, I was friendly with some of the oboe players at the time, Martha Scher. I think that some of the students had to sing their lessons in solfège.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he would, that was important for him.
Yes, yes.
And breathing was important for him. I'm sure you must have mm-hmm. heard his story with the candle.
Oh, you may repeat it.
Well, he talked about, as a little boy, he got his oboe and he went to the conservatory in Paris. And so excited, this nice shiny instrument. And the teacher, I don't know if he studied with Gillet.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Looked, opened the case and said, oh, very nice, and closed the case and put it under the, on the floor, and that was the end of the oboe for a long time. And he mm-hmm. took out a candle and lit it. And the idea is, of course, is to take the flame, I can't, I have to show you on the tape, mm-hmm. and control it. Control the height of the flame with your breath and get it down very small without letting it go out and mm-hmm. keep it there for a few mm-hmm. seconds. And he could not play on that oboe mm-hmm. until he could control that candle flame. And so the fact that me, as a member of his orchestra or a member of his woodwind class, would hear that story from him, mm-hmm. I would say breathing mm-hmm. was so important.
Yes.
Breath control.
Uh-huh. Did you talk about projection?
Well, that would come under singing, though.
Yes.
To sing in an instrument is projecting.
Uh-huh. How about spinning the sound? Did you?
Yes, spinning the sound, that sounds familiar. Mm. I think he was most, to me, he was most prominent in my playing as a phraser.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember, like, the Haffner Symphony. Bom, beam, ba-da-bom, the last mm-hmm. note, mm-hmm. less than the first one. Everything mm-hmm. had to be scaled.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I play it today, I still think of that. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, that must have been the best performance I ever played, and I'm sure it was the lousiest, but in my mind, I still, that would be a highlight.
Did Tabuteau stress the use of rubato?
Stress the use of vibrato.
Rubato.
Oh, the rubato was also part of the number system.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So definitely, yes. I mentioned before, 13-note a run. I mean, that would be rubato. Yeah. How to set that up.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So definitely.
Yeah. Let's see.
And unfortunately, so many Tabuteau people overuse the rubato.
Yes. Well, did you listen to him in the orchestra? Did you feel that he himself overdid it at that time? Or was he able to get away with it?
He was able to get away with it. Well, I think if you listen to the records today and all that, it's... But that goes for almost all of the musicians then.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the bass playing of Koussevitzky, the records, I mean, you couldn't play that way today and get a position, and he's still considered the world's greatest virtuoso who ever lived, and it's a joke. I mean, as far as rubato goes.
Yes.
So I think I think our times have changed.
Yeah, the style has changed.
We don't play that way anymore. Mm. But I remember going to the concerts and thinking how great his rubato was, and he would do things that, but I think it probably was overdone, at least under today's standards.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, he was, I was going to say he was influenced, but I don't know which, but remember, Stokowski was the big name and the big influence then, rather than Tabuteau, really, in the music world. And up until a year ago, when Stokowski died, everything he did was still very different.
Mm-hmm.
It was still in the old style, in the old rubato.
Yes. So, along these lines, Tabuteau didn't vary anything according to style period that you played with him, did
no.
he?
No.
So that everything when you did in orchestra class was pretty much
right.
the same system applied to.
Right. It may be that we never got to it. Mm-hmm. He was so involved in other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember. I wasn't involved in like a Bach style over a,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a Beethoven or Mozart style.
Mm-hmm.
He could have taught that, but not to my memory.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk in terms of character phases or moods in the orchestra?
No, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't.
Kind of about articulation, were there any?
Very important.
Mm-hmm.
again, I'm not sure it was him, but the hard syllable versus the soft syllable, the do versus the to.
Mm-hmm.
And but that really comes under color, but
mm-hmm.
that's still articulation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would articulation was important.
Uh-huh. Do you remember him stressing the long, the second part?
Yes.
Of the slur?
Yes. As you see, you've had more experience with them in recent years, and as you say things, I could pick them up and remember them.
Yes. Did he talk about like scaling of articulation in terms of, that in oboe classes he made them do scales and scale the articulation?
Right.
Did you have to do things like that?
I think so. Not as severely, but yes, we did.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, our classes were, they were 2 hours, I think, maybe three. And unfortunately, many times there were guests, people who were there watching, and he was influenced by people watching him, and he would go into all these antics and stories, and he might be especially cruel if there was somebody there. So it was hard. I can't tell. You can't tell sometimes whether he really meant it or he was doing it for the audience. I really feel he was... he was in show business,
mm-hmm.
He loved an audience.
You keep mentioning color, and mm-hmm. I was wondering how color and the number system, how you understand those two.
You mean how they... Well,
It's a vague term. It's hard to understand.
Well, let me just mention it very basically. If I, as a bassoon player, have various colors, and I get those colors out of moving the reed into my mouth,
mm-hmm.
how far into my mouth
mm-hmm.
to get a certain edge or a certain mm-hmm. darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And if each of those positions in my mind is a color,
mm-hmm.
and let's say I can produce like four colors, let's say, for a phrase,
mm-hmm.
I could conceivably start with one color and number it to myself. I couldn't project that maybe to a student. Always that when I arrived here, that reed would be in my mouth all the way in order to get
mm-hmm.
A darker sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finished, I'd want it to be thin out of my mouth, and I could number that rather
mm-hmm.
than just remember. It's
mm-hmm.
harder to remember. Should the reed be out or in?
Mm-hmm.
If number one means out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would conceive it. It was pretty basic, really.
Yeah. But number one, would that always refer to you, a bright?
That could, yes.
But not necessarily.
Well, to me it did, but maybe to someone else it could be the darkest. It depends where on your reed.
Yes.
Because I'm, as a double reed player, I have to do that. Right.
Is that rolling your lips, or is that just pushing, moving it?
It's really, it's a combination of lips, like your mouth,
mm-hmm.
opening, making the mouth, your cavity bigger for a bigger
mm-hmm.
a bigger sound.
Mm-hmm.
By opening your mouth on a bassoon, you make the bassoon longer, so
mm-hmm.
you have a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination. When the reed goes in, it's probably open your mouth more to compensate because the bassoon becomes shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're getting into
yes. what about balancing a chord? Is that an important thing?
Very big intonation,
mm-hmm.
tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Did
I want to just say one thing there? I think that Tabatou felt that intonation was not enough. Blending, balancing was equally important.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you could blend with an instrument and be a little out of tune, and that would be subject to approval.
Mm-hmm.
And you could blend and you could be in tune and not blend, and that would be disapproval.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You know, there, I think that's kind of a controversial subject.
Did talk about moving notes, as long as talking about playing in tune, talk about like in a raising the seventh degree, so it might be closer to
mm-hmm.
the tonic, and that
right.
kind of shifting, maybe in minor key, making the third lower, would it be? Or
yes.
Fifth?
Again, I can't remember whether that's Madame Soffray or Tabatou.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That was taught, of course, at Curtis. Yes. Again, you see, when you talk to someone when Curtis was over 25 years ago, it becomes, you don't know what teacher did what.
Yes,
It becomes Curtis at that point,
yes.
Rather than a specific person. It must be difficult for you, writing a book on Tabato without really confusing Tabato with the school, because he really was the institute.
Yes.
He was Curtis.
Yes. Yes.
When I applied for Curtis, well, when I was in high school, the bassoon player was Walter Getter, who really was, that was the great name in bassoon. And then Schoenbach got there. And then Kovar gave me the scholarship. And then D'Allegro taught me. It didn't really make any difference. They were all wonderful bassoon teachers, but I would have gone to Curtis anyway because of Tabato. I didn't go there specifically to study with Kovar or D'Allegro. Whoever was there was fine with me. But I wanted Tabato, and I think most wind players felt that way.
Yes, yes. Sound like the place to go to.
Right, at that time. I have to say that because we're plugging other schools.
Of course. I assume then that most of the best wind players came out of, that its influence was enormous in all the orchestras.
Every orchestra, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And you just, they'll get to a point eventually. I'm like, I was one of, I was at the end of Tabato's career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the 40s. You're going to run out of Tabato influence people pretty soon, but then my students and students of other orchestra players, I think he's going to influence for the history of orchestras, until another Tabato comes up.
Yes.
And I can't hardly imagine that happening today.
Yes.
I mean, you can compare him with Stokowski or any of the great character conductors, which are getting rarer and fewer today. There's just no room for personalities like that anymore. No one will accept Tabato to light his cigarette with the long oboe cane for a cigarette holder. You might find that in certain parts of New York, as a character, but you don't see that on the musical scene anymore.
Yes.
It's more, you can almost call a conductor by their first names, and they call you by their... The whole atmosphere and scene has changed today. So I don't know if that is going to create another Tabato. They may not.
It's interesting, outside of the woodwind circle, very few people, or the people that were at Curtis, very few people know about Tabato. They know about Stokowski. But they don't know about Tabato.
That's interesting. See, I wouldn't know that. But
he's even in the Baker's Biographical Dictionary, he's not mentioned.
Well, very few orchestra players are ever mentioned.
Yes, well, that's true.
But do you think he was special? Kincaid and both Key and Kincaid.
Yes. So you think someone who is important, who influenced so many people, should.
It's good that I hope what you do, your project really comes through.
That's partly why I'm doing
it. It might create another Tabato.
Yeah.
By a book like yours, the people would be looking for such a thing. There may be someone like that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Since many people don't know about Tabato, it's possible many people don't know about a Tabato now.
Yes.
I think I was just going to say that probably somebody like Sasha Schneider he has influenced the string world and the wind world also. I think Sasha's another great personality.
Yes, yes.
That's influencing chamber music.